This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. It may be hard to believe, but November 5th is not that far off. Just a tad more than 6 weeks away. And on November 5, the next 4 years of Virginia government gets repositioned. With a full House of Delegates, the governor, lieutenant governor, and state attorney general up for selection. That last one, attorney general, has two state senators facing off for the job. Democrat Mark Herring, Republican Mark Obenshain. And both have agreed to spend time with us today. Of course, there's plenty of other news to examine, from efforts to defund federal health care to the threat of shutting down federal government to, well, just let me note that political analysts Bob Roberts and Anita Kumar are here with us, too. So anything political you'd like to discuss, we'll be up for it right after this news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. So, which of these names do you recognize? E.W. Jackson, Ralph Northam, Ken Cuccinelli, Terry McAuliffe, Robert Sarvis, Mark Herring, Mark Obenshain, Anita Kumar, Bob Roberts. All but two of those people are going to be on the statewide ballot just a matter of weeks from now. And the other two right now are with us to help analyze what's going on in that election, plus anything and everything else political that you might care to discuss. You just have to give us a hint what that would be, what your preferences would be, and you give us that hint by calling in at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Already on the phone line with us, the White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service, Anita Kumar, and here in the Insight Studio, James Madison University politics and public policy guru, Bob Roberts. Thank you both.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for having us. And I was for a second there thinking I was going to be on the ballot in November.
I imagine there are some people who would think that would not be at all a bad idea.
I don't know how many votes I'd get.
So in just a few minutes, we're actually going to be taking a very specific look at the Virginia Attorney General's race. Both candidates in that contest, one Republican, one Democrat, have agreed to spend some time with us. But Anita, let's start on the national scene. Anything interesting going on, say, I don't know, in Congress, perhaps?
Well, not much is going on, actually, but there's about to be a lot going on. Actually, so the fiscal year for the federal government ends in about a week now, at the end of the month, at the end of September. And so Congress and the White House are trying to figure out what to do. So all this would do would just allow the government to keep functioning, for agencies to keep, you know, people to keep working, federal employees to keep working. And there's a big discrepancy or disagreement on what to do about it. The House, or I should say some Republicans in the House, want to attach this whole thing about a new budget to defunding what we have come to call health care, Obamacare. They want to defund that law that has passed a few years ago. And, of course, the White House doesn't want to do that. Democrats don't want to do that. So there's a big disagreement on how to do this. They're not even looking for a big compromise here. All they're trying to do is pass something so that the federal government can keep running for a couple more months. They're talking about till December just as a temporary fix, but they can't even agree on the temporary fix.
And the problem with that is if they make a temporary fix here, they run right into the debt ceiling, which
right.
is in about 3 weeks or in middle of November. So this is a complete disaster. Because in a sense, they've got these piled up on top of each other. They can't really reach a consensus within the Republican Party what to do. And therefore, everybody's floundering. They just don't know where to go. And if they have a train wreck, it could be a disaster in terms of for Virginia.
They are talking about whether the government would shut down starting October 1st if they can't come to an agreement. But, you know, I have to say they talk about that quite a lot around here, and it doesn't happen all that often. The last time was 95, 96.
But this time I think there's a much greater likelihood unless the Speaker is willing to put the bill to a vote.
Speaker of the House, John Boehner.
From the Senate, and depend upon Democratic votes to pass it. And there's some speculation, and you may have heard it, that if he does that, it may be just speculation, that he actually puts it on the floor and allows it to pass with a minority of Republican votes, he could lose his speakership. Now, that may be exaggeration.
Okay, so let me see if I'm tracking here, because you know I'm much slower than you or Anita.
Okay.
But the Speaker of the House announced, I think it was yesterday,
right.
that he is going to go ahead with the plan that the Tea Party element of the Republican House majority wants, which is a continuing resolution, meaning they will continue to fund the government even past the time the current...
Right. Just at the current levels.
Okay.
Just at the normal level, at what it is right now, I shouldn't say normal.
So they would pass a continuing resolution that would keep that amount of money going in the federal government, operating at that level for the next 12 months.
Right.
But within that legislation, there also would be a cancellation of what is officially known as the Affordable Care Act,
correct.
What Republicans like to call Obamacare.
Right.
Then that legislation goes to the Senate, where there's no question that the Senate is going to pull out the part that would defund Obamacare,
right.
pass its own continuing resolution
right.
that will keep the government going for at least a few months, and then send that back to the House. And that's the point at which the Speaker of the House,
has a
Republican
choice.
John Boehner, decides whether or not to take that Senate legislation
right.
that the Tea Party element of his party hates and put it up for a vote.
Right.
And if he puts it up for a vote, there's a good chance that between some Republicans who would support it and most all Democrats in the House who would support it, that it would pass.
It would pass.
And the government would not shut down.
Correct.
Right.
There would be enough Republicans from moderate areas where you have lots of government spending that they would join with the Democrats and pass it. And he knows that.
Yeah. And let's be clear. We have, 10 days, 11 days now for them to figure this out.
And you said something before. I just want to double check, Bob, because I wasn't clear on this. Is the debt ceiling not until the middle of November that it expires or the middle of October?
As Anita would explain, the debt ceiling is fungible. It's up to the Treasury decide when they absolutely have no more.
Well, one of the reasons I ask is because you think certainly the threat of shutting the government down. And if it also happened before the election, the threat of not raising the debt ceiling so that the government would be defaulting on its obligations, both of those could have effect on the Virginia election coming up in November.
Absolutely, because Virginia now is suffering badly from the sequester. The numbers are coming out now. If you have hundreds of thousands of federal employees not getting paid right before the election, and let's say it goes on for a couple of weeks, they're not going to be happy campers. And their families are going to be happy campers. And a certain number of those are going to take it on Republicans, who I suspect, if we asked Attorney General Cuccinelli, would he support holding the budget hostage to defund Obamacare, he would say yes. I suspect, because he hates
Obamacare. Yeah, but nobody's asked him. The Republican candidate for governor is the current state attorney general.
Yeah.
Well, I will say that Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic candidate for governor running against Ken Cuccinelli, put out a statement today urging Congress to avoid a government shutdown, which is sort of interesting since obviously that's not part of his purview if he were to become governor. And his statement was, "We can't allow our economy to be held hostage over an extreme Tea Party agenda and partisan fighting."
Right.
So just one other question about this, and then we're actually going to turn to the Virginia Attorney General's race for the decision about who's going to be the next Attorney General. The Tea Party element in the Republican caucus, is it your view, Bob Roberts, that they really don't care much about political consequences because they come from, first of all, fairly secure Republican districts where what they have to worry about for getting reelected is just not ticking off the extreme right wing of the party.
Right.
But also in terms of making it more likely that their party is going to be viewed well for the next presidential election or their party is going to be viewed well for gubernatorial elections in different states, that's something that...
I think they view it as an ideological purity issue, that they have committed themselves to defunding Obamacare. Their constituents want them to defund Obamacare, and therefore they're going to their base. And they believe that's all important above anything else.
Okay. Well, we're going to switch focus for a few minutes at least. And as usual, if you have a question about something that we've talked about before, we're always happy to go in circles here on Virginia Insight. And the phone number is 888-WMRA-TALK. We are going to talk specifically for the next few minutes about the Virginia Attorney General's race. But if you call us now about something else, we'll circle back to that eventually. So joining us now by phone is the state senator from Harrisonburg, who is the Republican candidate for Virginia State Attorney General, Mark Obenshain. Senator, good to be speaking with you again, sir.
Well, good to be talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
So, Senator Obenshain, what would Virginia be getting if voters decided to make you the next state attorney general, and how would that be different than the other guy?
Well, first of all, you know, this election this November is critically important at all levels, and, you know, we are just becoming aware of the fact that we really do have statewide elections, and awareness is growing, and trouble for us down ticket is trying to get through all of the publicity that is going to the governor's race. But the attorney general's office is critically important. And frankly, as I'm traveling around Virginia, I'm making it clear that I'm going to have two priorities as attorney general. Number one is to make sure that I'm doing everything possible to keep Virginia safe. And number two, closely related to what I heard you all talking about with sequestration, is that we've got to step up and make sure that we continue to make Virginia a job magnet, an attractive place for businesses to locate, to expand, to start. And as Attorney General, I can affect both of those things in a number of ways. Number one, with respect to keeping our community safe, I'm going to be fighting to protect our kids in and out of school. Kids are facing threats, the likes of which we didn't face when we were kids, gangs, drugs, violence, human trafficking, which is the fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world, is affecting 100,000 children in America. Average age of kids entering the sex trade is 13, which means that gangs are out there trolling shopping malls, schools, and Facebook, recruiting an awful lot of 11, 12, and 13-year-olds. We've got to stand up and protect these kids. We've got to protect our senior citizens as well. With respect to the economy, I think that, you know, certainly the attorney general's limited in his ability to create jobs, but we've got to make sure that we are creating an environment in which business wants to continue to create jobs here. It means protecting our right to work laws. It means doing the not so sexy but very important work of engaging in regulatory reform. We've adopted 1,400 new regulations just over the past 4 years. And I've long been an advocate for paying attention to the economic impact of these regulations. We've got to continue to focus on that. And frankly, we've got an EPA and a federal government that has great capacity to disrupt our positive job environment. Northern Virginia, they were doing it by trying to regulate rainwater as a pollutant under the Clean Water Act. It was going to cost Virginia hundreds of millions of dollars that was otherwise going to go to roads, and it was the
Senator Obenshain. I apologize for interrupting, but I just need to let anybody listening know that if they want to talk to you and ask you a specific question or make a comment, we only have you on the line here for a few more minutes. The phone number is 888-WMRA-TALK. I understand we already have a call for you. Is it okay if we go to that call, sir?
Mark, are you asking me?
Yeah, sure. I just want your, you know, because you were on a roll there, and I looked at the clock, and I thought, I need to find out if it's okay to get a listener question in.
Yeah, you bet.
Okay. This is Kasia calling from Fairfax, I believe. Kasia, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment for Republican candidate for Attorney General, State Senator Mark Obenshain.
Hi, Senator Obenshain. First off, I just want to say thank you, and I just want to say I love the ad you released with your daughter. Second, I'm appealing to you to continue to run a positive campaign, unlike your opponent, between now and the election. I was wondering, can you please commit to doing so, and will you challenge your opponent to do the same?
Did you hear that, Mark?
I had a little bit of difficulty hearing the actual question.
I think you're both on cell phones, so there's a little challenge here in getting you hearing each other well. My sense of what Kasia is asking or saying is that she thinks you've been running a positive campaign, that your opponent has not been. She congratulates you on running a positive campaign. Will you commit to continuing to do so and challenge your opponent to do so?
Well, look, you know, I thank you. And frankly, as I've been traveling around the state, I've wondered how it is that we're going to, how it is that down ticket, I'm going to bust through the curtain of publicity going to the top of the ticket. You know, what I found is by talking about the issues that are important, talking about my vision for Virginia, and maintaining a positive outlook amidst all the negative ads that we're seeing, I'm somehow breaking through. And I'm pleased that that's the case. I appreciate the words of encouragement. We plan to continue to focus on my positive message and my positive vision for Virginia.
Your daughter, Tucker, is heavily featured in that ad. I think anybody who's been paying attention to your race knows that she's spending a lot of time with you on this race, and she's actually your driver as well. And Bob Roberts, who is our political guru with us in studio, had Tucker as a student a couple of years ago at James Madison University. So because of that conflict of interest, Bob, we're going to go to Anita okay. to see if she has a question for Senator Obenshain.
Sure. Hi, Senator. I haven't talked to you in a while.
Hey, Anita. Good talking to you.
You too. I wanted to actually ask you about someone you know pretty well, the Lieutenant Governor, Bill Bowling. As you know, and I'll tell our listeners, the Lieutenant Governor had considered running for governor, not considered, was going to run for governor, and he's a member of your party, the Republican Party, and he decided to stay out for a long reason that we won't go into right now, but he's not getting involved because the Attorney General, Ken Cuccinelli, is running, as we all know. You know, the Lieutenant Governor had said he would stay out of the race. He wasn't going to really endorse. He had some issues with the Attorney General. I assume he had some issues with the Democratic nominee because it's someone not from his party. But over the weekend, there was some news in my former paper, The Washington Post, reported that the Lieutenant Governor actually got involved or tried to get involved in whether who should get an endorsement in the governor's race from the Northern Virginia Technology Council. And it was the first time a lot of people had heard he might be involved. And I know that you worked and still work with him a lot in the Senate. He presides over the Senate. And I've heard some people say that he's not a Republican anymore. He shouldn't be involved in the party. And I was wondering if you'd talk to him about his involvement. And do you think he should still be a Republican? Is he still a Republican?
Well, listen, you know, I figure that you and Bob, and with due respect, if I call you a talking head, that's a term of endearment. There are plenty of talking heads out there who can debate that question and figure out where Lieutenant Governor or other people belong. You know, he's going to make his own decision, and, you know, it's the way the ball bounces. And, you know, I've been out there talking to people across the spectrum, and one of the things that I'm proud of in my race is that I'm bringing together a broad coalition of folks in support of my candidacy and my bid for Attorney General. I grew up in a Republican Party in which we won elections and, frankly, governed best when we reached out across partisan lines. And in my race, which is what I'm comfortable talking about, I'm reaching out to independents, to Democrats, to Republicans, and I'm putting together a statewide coalition that crosses a lot of traditional bounds. And that's how I believe I'm going to win this race. And frankly, I think that's a pretty doggone good recipe for good government.
Nope. Nobody asks you about him when you're out campaigning. Is he doing things for you, the Lieutenant Governor, on the trail?
I don't get asked about it very much. You know, in my race, my understanding is he's an interested observer. I think I got a nice little tweet from him indicating that he liked my ad this morning.
Okay.
So we have to let you go in just a minute, but Mark, you and I have known each other long enough that you know I got to press. My first question was about what Virginia gets if you become Attorney General and how that's different from the other guy. And you answered the first part. I didn't hear an answer to the second part. What's different between you and the Democratic candidate?
Well, first of all, I have been out on the campaign trail talking about my vision, and my opponent's been out talking a lot about me. I'd be interested in hearing about his vision, number one. Number two is, I think that an important question for both of us, and one which I feel perfectly comfortable answering, is what are you going to do when Virginia laws are challenged, whether you agreed with those laws or not? There are a number of laws out there that, and statutes and other items that I may not have agreed with, and didn't agree with. Take, for example, the transportation bill. I voted against it, but I'm here to tell you that if it's challenged in court, I will vigorously, zealously, and unhesitatingly defend it. I think that it is critical for our attorney general to tell the voters what they're going to do. We learned from the Prop 8 case in California this year that if an attorney general doesn't defend the state law, it may fail by default, not because a court holds it to be unconstitutional or illegal. Our marriage amendment, both my opponent and I voted for it. He's had a change of heart since then. I still support it, but there's a fundamental question as to whether we're going to substitute our judgment for that of the voters. I understand the courts may ultimately strike it down or the voters may repeal it, but I think our job as attorney general is to step up where a good faith basis exists, and certainly with respect to the marriage amendment, there's so many unresolved issues in the courts that a good faith basis clearly exists. And it's our job to defend those laws and to let the courts and the people make the decision, not us, substitute our judgment.
State Senator, we're at time, Mark. So I'm going to cut you off there because we have to allow the same amount of time for the other guy that we're going to be talking to in a few moments. But we've been speaking with Republican State Senator from Harrisonburg and the Republican candidate this year for Virginia Attorney General, Mark Obenshain. Senator, thank you so much for making time for us.
Good to be with you.
And Kasia, thank you for your great question. So next on the phone line with us, the State Senator from Loudoun County, who is the Democratic candidate for Virginia Attorney General, Mark Herring. Senator Herring, thank you for making time for us.
Well, thank you very much for letting me join in the show.
Well, as you may know, your opponent in the current race was just on the phone with us. And I want to start, if I could, with the same question that I asked him. What would Virginia be getting if voters decided to make you the next state attorney general? And how would that be different than your opponent?
Well, again, thank you very much for having me on the show. And what Virginians will get if they elect me is an attorney general who will take the politics out of the office and put the law first. What we've seen with our current attorney general, Ken Cuccinelli, is that he has way over politicized the office. And time again, he has bent and twisted the law in order to try to impose policies on Virginians that are way outside the mainstream. My opponent, Senator Obenshain, would be a continuation of that. He himself has said that he and Ken Cuccinelli are like peas in a pod, philosophically, that he would pick up the baton from Ken and keep running in the same direction without missing a step. I think that's the wrong approach. I will take the politics out of the office and put the law first, and I will refocus attention on protecting Virginians and keeping our families and our communities safe, defending the rights of all Virginians, and returning ethics to the office of Attorney General.
Mark, and it may be confusing for our listeners who have not been following state politics too closely, because the previous guy's first name is Mark as well. But Mark Herring, I want to let anybody know who's just joined us that if they have a question or comment for you, we've only got you on the line for a few minutes now. So it would be good for that listener who wants to speak with you to give us a call right now at 888-WMRA-TALK. And all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. And we have a call from Fairfax. This is John. John, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment for Senator Herring, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me, Senator. I had a quick question. Do you really need to poll your office to determine if there's a good faith basis to defend a law that you voted for?
Senator Herring, could you hear John?
Not real well. Could you repeat the question for me?
There's been this reference. I think it was the Washington Times that published an article saying that you would poll your office about how to proceed on controversial issues like abortion. And he's asking if that, in fact, is what you would do.
You know, I'm not sure where the story came from about polling the office. But let me tell you first that there may be times when I'll be called upon to defend laws that I might disagree with, and you know, as a matter of policy. And I will defend those if they are challenged. However, an attorney general should not be defending laws that are unconstitutional. And so if a question came up about whether the General Assembly passed a law that contravened the United States or Virginia Constitution, what I would do is pull some of the legal experts in that subject matter within the Attorney General's office to pull together the legal analysis and the case precedent from the United States and Virginia Supreme Courts and in other courts and review those precedents and that legal analysis and make a judgment in my legal opinion whether I thought it was constitutional or not. And what I would not do, though, is try to put politics into it. It needs to be a decision that's based on the law. You also referenced abortion in particular. And let me say that there is an issue where my opponent and I differ significantly. On women's health, first of all, you know, I was raised by my mother primarily and my older sister. So with strong women in my life and as a husband and a father, I know that equal opportunities and rights for women and men are critical to the well-being and the progress of individuals, families, communities, and our economic development. And as Attorney General, I'll pursue an agenda that provides equal opportunity for women and respects women's rights to make their own health care decisions and provide security for Virginia's families. And in Virginia, we've witnessed the opposite approach firsthand in the form of attacks on women's reproductive rights, particularly from Ken Cuccinelli and my opponent, Mark Obenshain. And he has been running away from his record on women's health issues this entire campaign. He introduced a bill that would require women to have to report miscarriages to the police within 24 hours and repeatedly supported the personhood legislation in 2007, 2011, and again in 2012. And that would have outlawed or attempted to take a woman's right to choose away, as well as ban common forms of birth control. And so, you know, that he even called the ultrasound bill that landed us on the late-night comedy shows common sense legislation. So those are the same positions that Ken Cuccinelli has taken. We've seen how he's used that in the Attorney General's office to pursue imposing policies that are way outside the mainstream, and I think that's wrong.
John, thanks so much for your call and your question. Senator Mark Herring, Democratic candidate for Virginia Attorney General. I think you got word of this ahead of time, Mark, but just in case, I want to let you know that our panel today is made up of Bob Roberts, political scientist from James Madison University, and Anita Kumar, formerly of The Washington Post, when she used to report on you, among other people there in Richmond, and these days the McClatchy News Service White House correspondent. Anita had a chance to ask your opponent a question, so this time we're going to Bob.
Mark, the Southwest Virginia energy controversy became a major part of the campaign, and there's something called forced pooling. Do you have a position on that in terms of whether that is constitutional? In the light that Virginia ratified a constitutional amendment a few years back.
Okay, does one of you, either Mark or you, Bob, want to explain what forced pooling is?
Forced pooling is when landowners in a particular area, particularly south of Virginia, have to, in a sense, give up their property rights to allow energy companies to develop methane gas.
The state government, in essence, uses eminent domain.
Correct.
To take away an owner's rights to
decide on development.
Decide whether or not drilling can be done on their land.
Right.
Okay, Mark, your response, please.
Well, first of all, you know, the one of the big issues in the campaign involving Southwest and the whole issue about coal bed methane gas has really also circled around the case involving Consol Energy. And earlier, it was revealed that the Attorney General's office had intervened in the case on the side of out-of-state energy companies against Virginia landowners who were trying to get what they felt they were entitled to get the royalties after the gas had been extracted.
That was the current Attorney General, Ken Cuccinelli, who's now running for governor.
Right. Yeah. Okay. The current Attorney General. And At one point, the judge in that case, federal judge, expressed shock that the attorney general would weigh in on the side of the out-of-state energy companies against Virginia landowners. And I thought that was wrong for the attorney general, current attorney general, to do that. And then it was disclosed that that out-of-state energy company, Consol Energy, has contributed over $100,000 to Ken Cuccinelli's campaign for governor, compounding the conflict. And just this past finance report period, we learned that Mark Obenchain has now taken $15,000 from the same out-of-state energy company, Consol Energy. And that may explain why he has been silent about Ken Cuccinelli's handling of that case. And I would not side with the out-of-state energy companies over Virginia landowners who are trying to get what they're entitled to. And I think that Mark Obenchain would accept a campaign contribution from Consol in light of the controversy. It shows that it's nothing more than a down payment from Consol Energy to Mark Obenchain to make sure that this out-of-state company continues to have someone in the Office of Attorney General working for them rather than the people of Virginia. And I'll work for the people of Virginia.
Senator,
this company, yeah.
But we're just about out of time. And I wanted to ask you, the latest financial reporting that we've seen, which I think was as of the end of August, your opponent, Senator Obenchain, was reporting about twice as much money on hand donated to his campaign as your campaign. Two questions. Why? And are you the underdog?
Look, we will absolutely have the resources we need to communicate with the voters and to let them know about my record and my vision for the future and for the office, and let the voters know about Mark Obenchain and his record. And so we are actually closing the gap from the last report period, narrowing the gap. It also shows that we have more first-time contributors to the campaign, showing that the campaign is gaining steam and gaining momentum. There was just some recent polling that came out that has us up a couple points, and I think, you know, there are going to be a lot of polls. Some are going to be up, some are going to be down, but the one that just came out from Roanoke College shows I'm up 2 over Obenchain. And, you know, at the end of the day, the voters in Virginia will take a look at me and my opponent. They'll look at our records, and I think they'll find that Mark Obenchain is simply too extreme for our Commonwealth, that they're going to want someone like me who has shown, has a demonstrated record for responsible, pragmatic, and results-oriented leadership. And that's the kind of approach I'll bring to the Attorney General's office.
The state senator from Loudoun County, who is the Democratic candidate for Virginia State Attorney General, Senator Mark Herring, thank you so very much for making time for us, sir.
Thank you for letting me join in.
This is Virginia Insight. We've got call-in lines open at 888-WMRA-TALK to use for reaction to anything you've just heard from the two Virginia Attorney General candidates or anything else that has a political tinge to it that you'd like to talk about. 888-967-2825 is our phone number in all numbers. Bob Roberts, you keep track of campaign financing. Are you impressed that the Republican candidate has twice as much money on hand, at least at the last reporting, to the Democrat?
Not really, because when I look at what the candidate for governor, Mr. Cuccinelli, is getting, and he is not doing particularly well. And so it appears that certain Republican or traditionally Republican givers are giving to the Obenchain campaign and not giving to the other two Republican campaigns. So in a sense, I think Obenchain is, as he said on the show today, is trying to present more of a moderate position on a lot of issues.
Jeff Shapiro, the Republican, yeah. Richmond Times Dispatch, Freudian slip, Richmond Times Dispatch columnist, said recently in one of his columns that Obenchain, in essence, was the last best hope for the Republican Party in the state. Because, at least from Shapiro's point of view, Mr. Cuccinelli and Mr. Jackson, the lieutenant governor candidate on the Republican side, have no hope.
But I disagree with that analysis that they have no hope. I think they're perceived from the money the sources of money, large contributions, that they are not particularly good places to put their money.
Okay, we're going to continue in a bit more than 1 minute. And Nick in Charlottesville, you're going to be our first call when we get back. Our analysis panel today on Virginia Insight. White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service, Anita Kumar, who also spent many years covering Virginia politics for the Washington Post before she moved to the White House. And from the James Madison University Politics and Public Administration Department, Bob Roberts. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. And next we're going to Charlottesville. Nick, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I was struck by the two senators that you had on. One seemed to speak specifically to issues that are facing the Commonwealth today, while the other one seemed to kind of just want to gloss over the issues that are facing us. And I really felt like Senator Herring just was a little more forthright in his positions and where he would be positioned if he were to become Attorney General. I'd just like to hear what your commentators have to say about that.
My view in terms of both of them were, in a sense, emphasized. I think they had different agendas. I think Mark Obenshain was attempting to position himself as a middle-of-the-road candidate, and that's vital if he's going to win. And therefore, he was trying to focus on issues such as child trafficking that would appeal to a cross-section of Virginia voters. On the other hand, Mark Herring was, in a sense, trying to tie Obenshain to Attorney General Cuccinelli and to E.W. Jackson, that they were extremists. So both of them were, in a sense, had a different political strategy, and both of them explained their political strategy pretty well.
Senator Herring, I mean, he clearly has been doing that from the beginning. He feels like he's a big contrast to Senator Obenshain on a lot of issues.
I'm sorry, Anita, everybody else probably caught this, but I didn't know what you meant by that. Doing what?
Well, that Senator Herring did talk a lot about his opponent, sort of more than Senator Obenshain did. You know, that was something that Senator Obenshain said, Mark Herring is so busy talking about me. He did try to contrast that a lot. I think that's because he feels on a variety of issues. He mentioned women's rights and some other things that he thinks there's a big difference. But he is between him and his opponent. But
Herring said that about Obenshain.
Yeah, yes. I mean, it's definite. No. Obenshain said that Mark Herring is so busy talking about me. I don't do that. I'm not doing that.
Right.
And so I think that is his strategy, though. I'm very, you know, saying I'm very different than Mark Obenshain. I'm very different than the current Attorney General, Ken Cuccinelli.
Right.
Definitely trying to paint them as extremists.
Right.
I get confused with pronouns. But, Nick, did we answer your
question? There's a lot of marks there.
Yeah, there are. Nick, did you get an answer to your question?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really the crux of the campaign is you know, will Obenshain be a continuation of the Cuccinelli term, or will he be something completely different? And I think that's where the voters need to really decide what they think the future holds if one or the other gets elected. But I appreciate your comments.
Nick, thanks so much for taking the time to call us. Bob Roberts, switching for a moment to the governor's race. Again, November 5th is just a little bit more than 6 weeks away. When we find out who's going to be the next governor, the next lieutenant governor, the next state attorney general. Who's Robert Sarvis?
He is the Libertarian candidate.
Yeah, I knew that, but what else can you tell us about?
Not much. In other words, he's a Libertarian. He strongly believes in small government. Government should do very, very little as a Libertarian. And that government shouldn't get involved in the private lives of citizens.
So he's the Libertarian candidate for governor who...
Right.
In the latest Quinnipiac poll,
has 7 points.
I thought you were going to bring this up.
Yeah, I have to say, this is not the first poll where he's polled
right.
that high, which
right.
I know people are saying 7%, that's high. It is high. For the Libertarian third-party candidate, it's extremely high. And there's been several polls, those that put him in, some people don't even put him in there, those that actually poll on him, we have seen those numbers pretty high. And that, I think, goes to, as Bob was about to say, there's some dislike for both candidates.
Absolutely.
For the Democratic candidate, Terry McAuliffe, for the Republican candidate, Ken Cuccinelli, and people are searching for something else.
They are. And so he offers an alternative, whether actually they will cast the vote for him as a protest vote, they could, or a significant number of voters may undervote. We've heard the term before.
Well,
for example, Republican women right now, there's some data out there that Republican women really dislike, or a number of moderate Republican women, Northern Virginia in particular, they do not like Attorney General Cuccinelli.
Isn't there a long history, though, of polls showing an independent party candidate
Correct.
Doing much better than
they actually do
when
on
people
election
go
day.
Into the voting booth?
Absolutely.
So if that happens here, those people who currently are saying they're leaning towards Sarvis, aren't they more likely to give their vote to the Republican candidate?
No, they're maybe likely to sit home and not vote at all. And in fact, there's a certain history of libertarians will not vote for either party. That's about 2 or 3%. Now,
right.
if it goes up to 7%, then you're getting individuals who actually would normally have voted for somebody else who've decided to cast a protest vote.
And it's also worth noting in this latest Quinnipiac poll that we're talking about, where the Libertarian candidate polled at 7% again, Mr. Cuccinelli remained at 41%,
right.
But Mr. McAuliffe, the Democratic candidate, dropped a couple of points.
Correct.
He's down to 44%. Lots of undecideds, lots of people who are not happy about either candidate,
Correct.
It seems.
But I have to say, we're in September. That's still pretty normal. I mean, some of those things are just factors that people are just starting to pay attention. I mean, we've been paying attention for a year, right, or more.
Right.
But a lot of people aren't paying attention, and they're now trying to figure that out.
But in fact, if you go back to governor's races all the way back through the 1980s and 1990s in particular, the numbers after Labor Day don't change that much. I mean,
So at this point, if these numbers were still the same at Election Day, it's within the margin of error
right.
for polling,
yeah.
so it would be called too close to call.
It would. Who turns out your... It basically a repeat of the 2012 presidential race in Virginia, who's able to get their people to the polls.
Well, so, Anita, since we've got you looking at all kinds of national and international issues, let's just jump to a completely different topic.
Okay.
You were covering some stuff recently about immigration, I understand.
Yes, I was. So immigration has been, an issue all this year. As many people know, the Senate passed an immigration bill, and that was a while ago now, and now the House of Representatives has not done that. What they're doing is they're taking sort of smaller bills, sort of a piecemeal approach, what they're saying, instead of what some people are calling, a comprehensive bill that deals with a lot of different things, including border enforcement, illegal immigrants who have a pathway to citizenship. But I got to tell you, the last few weeks, it seems that issue has not gone anywhere, really. Because of a couple things. I mean, there's just been a lot of news about other things. Congress has been preoccupied with a lot of things, including whether to use military force in Syria. That was the most recent thing. But I think, Congress has returned back. They're going to deal with this budget issue we talked about earlier, and we'll see what happens. I had recently done some reporting about the president's role in this debate, and he is taking a very different role than he has in the past, and he's being very, I wouldn't say hands off, but he is definitely being very behind the scenes about this. He's not going out and doing a lot of big speeches. He thinks that if he goes out and does those, Republicans probably won't vote for it because they don't like to vote for things that he supports, which is pretty normal for either side of the aisle. So he's still hopeful that something can get done later this year.
Well, joining us now by phone is the longtime activist for immigrants' rights in the Shenandoah Valley, as well as a volunteer with the statewide group Virginia Organizing, Rick Castaneda. Mr. Castaneda, good to be speaking with you again, sir.
Good to talk to you again, too, Tom.
Well, Rick, as I understand it, you and others affiliated with Virginia Organizing are trying to change the tone of the debate about immigration reform. So tell us what it is you're after.
Absolutely, Tom. That's a great way to characterize it. What happens very often is issues have only basically a sort of political side to them. And by doing that, we easily forget the human sides of all these issues. And so we are planning an event. There is a national event going on October 5th. Which is sort of the National Movement for Dignity, the National Day of Dignity and Respect. And here in Harrisonburg, we're going to recognize that day by holding an event where we meet at Lucy F. Sims School and sort of have a silent march, pilgrimage march to Court Square.
So you're talking about Harrisonburg?
Because
we cover a large part of the state. There are some people
yes.
listening who don't know about the places you're referring to. So this is an event taking place in Harrisonburg at Court
That's
Square?
Right. We will meet at the Lucy F. Sims School Building at 620 Sims Avenue and sort of have a pilgrimage march all the way down to Court Square where we will be laying down flowers to acknowledge the real human lives that we're talking about. Because when we talk about immigration and immigration reform, I think one thing that we lose sight of is sort of the upheaval and the massive upheaval of life and family that happens in the transition, in the process of immigration to this country, under whatever circumstances. There is a massive upheaval of family situations, of children and parents. There's a large number of people who lose their life every year in the process of crossing the border. There are a large number of women and children who are assaulted in the process of crossing the border. And so I think it's very easy for us to get wrapped up in debating our stances and our points. And really often in our nation, we don't have an actual immigration debate. What we have is one stance or one side of the issue having their press conferences, marches, and rallies, and then the other side having their press conferences, marches, and rallies. And we actually don't speak to each other. Those who don't always agree on all the points don't actually have conversations with each other. And I feel like it's only limited sort of to our legislators debating these issues on Capitol Hill.
Rick Castaneda, it seems to me that I have heard it said that what Virginia organizing is after here is a tone of dignity and respect. It seems to me I've heard those words. Is that, am I on target here?
That's right. That is exactly correct. And sort of the way that we, what we offer to each other, the kindness, the forgiveness, the tone that we offer to each other is basically, are we offering the same that we expect being offered to ourselves, to us in any situation?
Well, I'm curious about those terms, Rick, because sometimes people on the other side of the immigration debate who see that from their point of view, they don't want laws broken. They want things to tighten up in terms of people coming over the border illegally, that they feel like they're not treated with dignity and respect because they're often accused of simply being racist or being anti-Hispanic.
Sure.
Can I take it from what you're saying that you really want more of a sense of dignity and respect for all sides in this debate?
Absolutely, Tom. That's a great sort of conclusion to draw from this. Of course, there's nothing, in my opinion, nothing greater than the dignity of human life, you know, and respect for that. And so that's why I think this event kind of emphasizes those points as well, in terms of the lives of immigrants who are in the process of crossing the border and in the process of sort of, and the dignity we take away from them. They may be educated in their countries, and they're, because of sort of the process of transitioning to a new country and a new language, aren't afforded the ability to work in their careers, even though they're well educated in those careers. And so there's all sort of forms that loss of dignity happens, but also I think that we can afford to offer dignity and respect to the conversation and to the debate. You know, debate itself has rules to it because it's a gentleman's sort of activity and gentlewoman's activity where we speak to each other under these certain set of guidelines and rules and offering that dignity and respect to each other in this conversation where we actually hear each other's points and work together to find solutions to those differing points.
Bob Roberts, we've got Mr. Castaneda on the line with us for less than 60 seconds more. You got a question for him?
Yeah, it seems like your major problem has been not with the Democratic Party, which is fully behind immigration reform, but with Republicans largely in conservative rural districts that are very, very much opposed in Virginia, for example, and many states to immigration reform. They take a very, very hard line view.
So we're almost out of time.
How do you deal with that situation where you're dealing with large numbers of very conservative Republicans who have no inclination to change whatsoever?
Yeah, I mean, that's an absolutely great point. I think that I think what happens is there's a lot of misinformation out there. And so part of this process is being able to have these actual dialogues with each other, these actual conversations with each other. And sometimes we have to do it through these planned activities and events. But I think if people from different sides are able to have a forum where they're able to express their actual views, and Virginia organizing is that's been a part of one of their strategies, is creating opportunities for people to have dialogue with each other, to share their stories. I think there's any controversial issue changes its nature and its very tone by the simple fact that you have a direct connection and direct relation with someone who's directly impacted by that controversial issue.
Rick Castaneda, volunteer with Virginia Organizing. Good to talk to you, Rick. Thanks so much for making some time for us.
Thank you, Tom.
So we've got just a couple minutes left, less than that, and there are two names mentioned at the top of the hour we haven't addressed yet. E.W. Jackson, Ralph Northam, candidates for lieutenant governor, Jackson Republican, Northern Democrat. Is Jackson, Bob Roberts, considered generally the weakest candidate in the Republican slate this year?
The popular media considers him the weakest candidate. His campaign believes, if you talk to his supporters, that they have this secret grassroots campaign that will surprise everybody at the end, and that they view that he is the strongest candidate because he's going to energize the base, whether that's wishful thinking or not.
He makes no bones about his very conservative social issue
correct
views
on abortion, on gay rights, but he believes he has the ability to mobilize voters who feel, who believe strongly in his positions, and they'll turn out on election day and surprise everybody.
And you know, he might get some enthusiasm for that, but the bottom line is Virginia's a big state, and right, there are a lot of people. And if he doesn't,
well, you
have...
ask about Bill Bowling earlier when we had Mark Obenchain on. He's the current lieutenant governor in his second term. He will no longer be lieutenant governor after this election. He's a Republican. If we end up with a Democrat as a lieutenant governor, that changes everything in the state Senate, doesn't it?
Right.
Assuming that his seat would be filled by a Democrat, and assuming if Herring wins the attorney general, his seat would be filled by a Democrat. So because you've got two senators.
But they're from fairly solid Democratic districts.
Loudoun County is a particularly wanting an off year.
See, I really wanted you to say, oh, yeah, we got that. Could mean a big change in the state Senate and a whole bunch more stuff to talk about next time. But we'll find stuff to talk
about
next time.
That's simple.
Our guests have been Bob Roberts, professor of political science at James Madison University, plus McClatchy Newspaper's White House correspondent and Charlottesville native Anita Kumar, as well as earlier in the program, Republican candidate for Virginia Attorney General Mark Obenchain, Democratic candidate for Virginia Attorney General Mark Herring, and immigrant rights advocate Rick Castaneda from the group Virginia Organizing. Hey, gang, thanks so much for making time for
us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Virginia Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And when you get to that page, you will find more information about today's guests. Thanks so much for tuning in to this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.